Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the Fail to Fail podcast with your host, Don Abernathy.
Hi, I'm Coach Suver, and today is part one of locomotor movements. So we're going to work on four locomotor movements today. We're going to do some running, skipping, hopping, and jumping today.
Welcome to another episode of the Fail to Fail podcast. I'm sorry, but if you want to complete the locomotive movement session, you're going to have to go check out her YouTube. Joining us live is an ultra marathon extraordinaire. She's making her way on the scene. Recently won number one in her overall, not even age group, but overall recently in a local triathlon. We will get to that later. But joining us right now, Ironman athlete Gabriella Sorber. Ma'am, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. How are you doing tonight? It's a crazy day in Florida. It's starting to rain behind me. So if for some reason we lose connection, that's not a big deal. We'll just wait until my internet comes back on. You know how it is here in Florida. But yep. I guess to get the audience familiar with you, where did you grow up? And how did you get to Florida if you didn't grow up here? Because chances are you didn't, because no one grew up in Florida. Floridians are very rare down here.
Yes, they are. Well, I guess I kind of grew up in New York. I was born in the Bronx, and I lived there until I was about 13. So I moved down to Spring Hill, Wekiwachi area, Hernando County, Florida. So I went to high school here in Florida, and I've been in Florida since then.
You know, I have to say, as an import myself, I moved out here in 2001. I think if you spent more than 20 years in Florida, you can just call yourself a Floridian at that point. I mean, I've lived in Florida more than Ohio, Kentucky, or California, the other three states I lived in. And I'd say at this point, I'm more of a Floridian than anything else because I spent more time down here. So the interesting thing about triathletes is, obviously, as the name implies, you're into three sports, but especially when you do an Ironman, at a high level. And I had another Ironman athlete on here from Claremont, Florida, Mr. Robert Hale. An interesting thing about Robert is he was ex-Navy, and he shocked me when he told me his biggest anticipation when doing an Ironman is he hates open water swimming. I'm like,
oh, wow.
You're in the Navy. How are you afraid of open water? He said he literally gets there early and paces along the beach and psychs himself out before getting in the corral to start up his race. But he's done like three or four of them. So he gets himself past it. But I think that plays in a very important role in all that, which we'll get to later, which is mind state. How much of whether you're doing ultramarathoning, regular marathoning, running, working out, triathlons, most of it is mind state. But to back up a little bit, what I was getting to is with triathlons, you have three sports. What was the first sport for you? Was it as a kid, teenager, were you running first? Were you biking first? Were you a swimmer? How did this all come into your world?
Yeah, good question. I kind of started as a runner. I always wanted to run, but I didn't really get the opportunity until towards the end of high school. The first high school I went to was a private high school, and it didn't really have a lot of girl sports. So I started running kind of my senior year. I did track and cross country. And I loved it. And then I continued it into college. First year I was a walk-on, for Pasco Hernando. It's a state college now. It was community college. And then, by my second year, I was able to get on a scholarship for running.
Well, I was going to ask you that, when you said that you went to a small private school, which not very many sport team, my first thing is, well, they're basically preventing a lot of potential athletes for getting scholarships, but you found a way as first one to walk on, but your natural abilities. And let's not overlook the fact that you didn't really start running habitually or competitively until you're a senior. And by your second season of college, you're getting a scholarship. That is in and of itself is tremendous. I mean, because let's be honest, most people, they join track in sixth grade. They learn the fundamentals and find their gig. And then through high school, they start getting more and more proficient and then focusing on college. You just didn't have that. You just made the best opportunities out of what you had. And that's fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, I was very thankful to finally get the opportunity, and I loved it. Took to it right away.
When did the biking and the swimming come into it?
So, because I was such a late bloomer and I kind of went full throttle into the sport, unfortunately, my nutrition wasn't very good at the time. In high school, I struggled with an eating disorder. So by the time I started running, my body was kind of already not in super great healthy shape.
Sure.
So add running to the mix and under fueling, I started getting injured a lot. Unfortunately, by my third year of college, I started breaking down. Like the first 2 years I was okay and it caught up with me. So when I transferred to USF, I was pretty much injured more than I was able to run at that point. So I ended up spending a lot of time cross training, cycling, swimming. And I did try a triathlon towards the end of high school, like in between high school and college. My high school coach did triathlons and she kind of encouraged me to try one and I loved it. And I knew it was definitely something I would want to do in the future, but I just couldn't really while I was running on the team in college. But it was fun.
Now to back up a little bit, because you're talking about when you got into it because of your late state stage training, bad diet, going into it, kind of your body's breaking down. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the importance and the spotlight shined on recovery really didn't start getting noticed until the last few years, right? I mean, it seems like people didn't focus. And for example, I host a World War II based podcast, one of my other podcasts, and we recently had an Army reservist on there who one of his jobs is the PT for the reservist. And we were talking about how in Army boot camp, they're finally realizing the importance of recovery. Whereas back in the day, it was get up, make them run, exhaust them for 12, 13 hours every day, every day, every day, make them tough, make them tough. But now they're starting to realize, oh, we need to incorporate diet. And more important, sleep, importantly, because one of the things back then was during combat, you're not going to get much sleep, which is true. But now during boot camp, they're starting to focus more on diet, sleep, and the importance of recovery. And I think much like I know myself, I didn't start running until 6 years ago, even though ironically, my running coach in high school wanted me to run because she saw me running with a group of people around the track. But at that point, my life was nothing but skateboarding and snowboarding and everything else be damned, which now at 45, my knees thank me for it. But recovery is so important in diet and sleep, all three of those. And when a lot of people make that transition into a more of a, I don't want to say strenuous, but a more of a long-term endeavor opposed to going to the gym for 45 minutes to an hour, long-distance running, long-distance cycling, swimming, those type of activities, diet and recovery are very, very important. How does an athlete such as yourself incorporate training, especially you're not just training for running, swimming, or biking, but how do you incorporate three different practices, plus make sure your sleep, your diet, and recovery, and your daily work schedule? How do you make all that work?
Yeah, good question. It's definitely not easy. It takes a lot of planning and preparation in advance, especially. So with training, I do have a coach, so she kind of helps me out with that. I usually try to swim at least 4 times a week, 4 to 5. I go to like early morning practice with the team. With a swim team. And then all the other training is mostly solo whenever I can fit it in into my schedule. So I'll do 4 runs a week. So two runs during the week and then 2 runs on the weekends. So I'll have like a long run and then a brick run off the bike. And then kind of similar for the bike, I'll have like 3 bikes during the week, and then my long ride will be on the weekend. So I'll save my long endurance stuff for the weekend when I'm not
Sure.
working. And then during the week, just kind of fit it in wherever, however I can. I usually get up pretty early and I go to bed like lights out by 8 o'clock.
Wow, that's early.
Well, because sleep is so important, and like I really do best on 9 hours of sleep. Like 8 is pushing it. Like I do better closer to 9. So I try to like be in bed, lights out, like sleeping by 8 o'clock so that I could get up early and still have enough energy and sleep and get training done before I start. But I prep meals and stuff ahead of time. So like I'll wake up, like if I have practice at 6 o'clock, thankfully it takes me only 10 minutes to drive there, but I'll wake up and give myself just like 15, 20 minutes between I wake up and get out the door. So like to brush my teeth, get everything ready. I make homemade bars. Mm-hmm. So I'll like grab it, eat it in the car on the way to practice. And then I track all of my calories on the Fitness Pal app. So I try to match what I burn each day. And then also my macros, make sure I'm getting enough protein and carbs. So I try to, that's kind of how I keep track of my fueling to make sure I am getting enough for my training.
Two things. One, when it comes to your training regimen, obviously you probably really have to hard code that swimming. The nice thing about running and biking, if you're running late, your schedule gets messed up, you just open the front door and away you go. But unless you live within a block from the beach, you know, swimming, that's something you have to, okay, I got to make sure I get to swimming, because obviously they have hours. And anybody who goes to the gym or any public facility know, even if it's a private facility, those facilities have busy times. And you got, can't go there at 6. It's way too damn busy. Can't go there at 9:30. All the people who think they're skipping a 6:30 crew is going to be there. So you got to find that time. And so out of those three regimens, that's probably the one you have to make sure you stick to your calendar the most.
Yeah, definitely. Because like with the bike, I can always just bike on the trainer in the dark in the morning. But like with swimming, like you said, the hours are limited. There's busy times. So yeah, that definitely takes planning. So I kind of make swimming a priority as far as scheduling wise with the other training. And then the other training, I can just kind of fit where I can.
Well, and the fact that you go to bed at 8 o'clock here in Florida means morning is basically your only time to train right now. I have the advantages. I'll try to get up and run in the morning, which for me is I have to get up, I got to be out here by 6:45. So I got to get up 4:45 in order to go run 3 miles. But what I find happens then is if I oversleep or I'm dragging ass, my job still starts at the same time. And so then I'm at the position, well, okay, I'm in a hurry. Do I cut my stretching down? But if I do that, my runs are going to be slower because I'm going to be in more pain a lot longer because I'm 45. And so then I'm juggling this. Well, either I get my full stretch regimen in but only run 2 miles, or I cut my regimen in half but run slower 3 miles because I'm not getting the full stretches in, or wait until run at 9:30 at night, because between 4:30 and 9, it's averaging 98 degrees around here right now if it's not raining. But the fact that you go to bed at 8 p.m., it's like mornings is your – that's your only option, really, except for weekends, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do find myself running at the worst, hottest times of the day sometimes just because of, scheduling. But I actually find it kind of beneficial.
Especially for what you do.
Training. Yeah. So it works out.
What we fail in altitude training down here, when you go run in other states, you definitely make up for in this sucks. It's hot and humid.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know if this is an apt description, but the only way I can explain what it's like to run in high humidity is it feels like you have an invisible fishing net around you. You just feel like you're pulling something. It's just hard and just soggy.
Yeah, it's like thick air. Like even breathing, it's like hard to breathe in. Yeah.
So when you started, you ran your first triathlon. And then you started training. What did you focus on first, the most, the swimming aspect or the biking aspect? Because, I mean, you already had some running in your experience through college at that point.
Like when I started focusing on triathlon as a whole?
Yeah, when you started focusing on it, I said, okay, I got three regiments I got to train for. The running, I'm good. I have got to continue it, but I have a background. But did you find yourself less proficient at swimming or biking long distances that you decided you need to focus on more when you first started doing your training?
So thankfully with biking, I did have some experience, because towards the end of college, I switched from running to bike racing. And my ex, at the time he was a cyclist and he raced on the team. So I biked a lot with him and he kind of showed me a lot of, like how to be a cyclist.
Sure.
So I kind of like became a cyclist for a couple of years. I stopped running for like at least a year or two completely. And just did that until I was in a bad accident and shattered my elbow and got 3 plates and 15 screws. And wow. That kind of like, I'm done with bike racing.
All in your elbow or in different parts of you?
Yeah. Elbow, like just full. You can kind of see the scar. But
how
like,
does that impact your swim?
I blame it on the elbow.
So is it safe to say out of your 3 times, your swimming times, probably the slowest out of the 3?
Yes. Yep, that is correct.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing, particularly in Ironman, that they get it out of the way first? Do you find that by the time you get on the bike, your elbow's kind of seasoned up, or are you glad to get the swim out of the way first?
I like that it's first. Well, for one, it's like the shortest percentage of the whole race. So it's like you kind of just get it over with. I kind of feel refreshed. Like it's almost like a warm up kind of for me.
Sure.
Also like usually the water's a little calmer in the morning. As you go through the day, the winds pick up, the chop will kind of pick up a bit more. So like, I feel like it's better to swim early first.
To bring people up to speed who maybe aren't familiar with the different lengths of the event of triathlons, and myself included, I know what the distances are on Ironman, but are different triathlon races kind of like running races where you might, obviously they're going to be longer, but for this example, running at 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, 50 miles and ultra marathons. Are there different lengths to triathlon events? Or are they all roughly the same?
Yeah, there's different lengths. You have, there's Ironman, like the big one. So the 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, 26.2 mile run. And then you also have 70.3 or half Ironman. It's sometimes called middle distance triathlon. And that's pretty much like half of Ironman. So like 1.2 mile swim, 56 bike and 13.1 mile run. And then you have Olympic distance or international distance. True Olympic distance is like a 1.5K swim, 40K bike, and then a 10K run. International is kind of like a variation of Olympic distance, but it might be like a little off. So like the swim might be a little more, or the bike might be a little less, like not exact. And then you have the sprint distance triathlons, which are the shorter ones. So the swim could be anywhere from 400 yards to 800 yards. The bike could be 8 to 15 miles. And the run is usually still a 5K, but some triathlons might have it like 4 miles or 2 miles. Like it depends on the race.
Are you familiar with the concept of a backyard marathon?
A backyard marathon? Not super familiar, but if I had to take a guess, is it doing a marathon in your backyard?
No. It's apparently ultra runners just, running the Leadville 100 or running 200 miles, 400 miles. That's not good enough for some of these cats. So over the past couple of years, and to be honest, some of them have gone longer now. I've recently grown aware of them, but what a backyard marathon is, it's a easiest way to describe this. It's a marathon that does not have an ending point. It's last man standing. And so you go out and you run 5 miles. You got like an hour. Some of them are different. Sometimes you run 3, sometimes you run 4. You run 5 miles in an hour. And then you have to be in the corral for the next lap. and you go and you go and you go until it's literally one last person standing and everybody else has already dropped out. And as time goes by, as you get more and more tired, you know, your first couple of laps, like, oh, this is easy. I can run, you know, 5 miles in 45 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever. By lap six, it's like, I just got here and I got 5.5 minutes before I have to stand in line again. And so as you go, your stamina starts to wear down, your body starts to wear down, and it's literally a last man standing event. And so I was wondering if triathlons have gotten to that point yet where someone's like, we need a backyard triathlon. And I didn't know if that was a thing yet, but if you want an interesting YouTube watch on a weekend or maybe when you're, you know, relaxing after your training, look up backyard marathons, or even more exciting, it's the Barkley Marathon. And that's another one. That one's in Tennessee. You can't sign up on their website. The only way you can sign up is you have to know somebody who did. And they only select 43 people. And when you get selected, you get a letter of condolence. We're sorry to inform you that you've been selected. There's no entry fee. You usually have to bring a license plate and sometimes a t-shirt or $1.50. And so you show up at this park in Tennessee on a certain day with 40 other people. They don't tell you what time the start is. It's going to be either between 6 a.m. today or 8 p.m. tomorrow. And so you're milling around. You're sleeping in a tent. An hour before the undetermined start time, the only person who knows, the organizers, they go out and blow a conch shell. So it could be at 2 in the morning. Okay, well, the race starts at 3. And it's kind of like the backyard marathon, except for the laps are through the woods of Tennessee, and it changes every year. And every lap goes a different direction. So the first lap is clockwise. The second lap is counterclockwise. I think in 23 years, only six people have finished this race. It's insane. But when you watch this, you're like, oh, I can't remember his name. There's a famous ultramarathon. I think 2019, he lost the race by 5 seconds to the cutoff because he got lost. And that's the thing, too. There's no GPS. You can't wear your Garmin or anything because they don't want people to know the map course. And how they determine, and there's no aid stations. The only aid station is when you finish the lap. How they determine that you made it to the checkpoints is there's different books hidden in the woods, and you have to pull the page that has the number that coincides with your bib. And so when you finish your 5 or 8, or however many mile lap it is, you have to turn in your pages to make sure you went through all the checkpoints. And that is an insane race, but people travel all over the world to do it. And once you watch it, you'll be like, oh, I got to find the previous year version. And it's an insane race, but I know it's not anything I would ever be able to do, but I just find it so motivating to see people just out there literally running through briars and creeks and over hills and literally getting their ass kicked. And as you know from being in the sport, it's a very welcoming community. And so you'll see the people who dropped out in like the first 24 hours. By, you know, the end of day three, it's down to like 4 people. And when they come in for their break before the next session, like all the people who ran previously are like trying to crew for them. Like, oh, let me go. I'm going to help your crew. I want to get you some extra socks here. You know, here's some of my, you know, stuff that I didn't use. And it's such a cool event, but it's like the anti, it's everything. It's so everything that a marathon is. How they start the race is the organizer lights a cigarette. If that isn't anti-fitness, I don't know what is. And so you have this insane marathon that's through the woods of Tennessee that you don't know when it starts. And it's when it does start, it's started by the organizer lighting a Marlboro Red on the front line. But people from all over the world, they try to sign up every year. And I think this year, 2023, 2 people actually finished it.
Oh, wow.
And so people are getting better at it. But it's definitely, you got to know how to navigate. You got to know how to do it while with a lack of sleep. Oh, the guy who came in second place this year, last year, got so sleep deprived and got so many hallucinogens. They found him in the cops found him in the next county over talking to a trash can. That's how sleep deprived he was. But this year he came in second place. So when you do come back, it gets a little easier. But and that's the thing too. If you do finish the race, they make you hit the Office Max easy button. It says that was easy. And if you time out or you quit, they play taps for you. So the whole thing is just an crazy race. It's called the Barkley Marathon. Look for it on YouTube.
Dang.
What was the first organized triathlon that you signed up for, with the exception of the one that you did in college?
Let's see. My first one, out like after college, you mean?
Yeah,
Or
like when okay, I'm no longer doing this collegiate. I'm doing this because, let's be honest, I'm crazy and this is what I find a desire to do. I mean, I tell people I don't run because I enjoy running. Running sucks. I enjoy for the feeling I get after the run is done. And you know, that's kind of how I do it. But what was it? What was the, was it the Central Florida Triathlon Series in 2014?
actually, probably. Yeah, that sounds about right, actually.
Says race number two, so I don't know what the first one was.
They have a series. They have like one in June, July, August, September. So it's like you can pick which one to go to. Some people do the whole series. So I might have like just done one of those.
So on that particular race, because I'm cheating here, thank God to the internet, you were 135th out of 516 on the swim. On the bicycle, you were 139 out of 512 people. And on the run, you were 73 out of 516. That's damn good for your first triathlon.
Cool.
And
Thanks.
let's see, full course. Here you go. Full course, you finished 15 out of 181 women in your category. And you're, this is actually fantastic stat. Out of 516 people, you're 88. Like you're, I mean, out of 516 people being 88 in your first trial, you're in, it's a big pack, but you're in the front of the pack there. I mean, you outran a hell of a lot of people.
Cool. Thanks. Didn't even know.
That's the wonders of athletes. They spy on you, they track everything.
That's right. I still gotta go add some
Here's the
stuff.
question. So it looks like you did the Central Florida Triathlon Series, and then you went to Claremont and did the Claremont Challenge. Then you went to,
Ooh.
then you, yeah. Ooh, was that bad? Was that a rough race for you? We can look at the stats.
That was a rough race. Yeah, that was like right after I had to take a couple weeks off from a concussion.
So
And
now, was the concussions from the same wreck as the bike that put the needles and pins in you, or was that a different accident?
was a different accident. It was like at work, like just it was a dumb accident. I just slipped and like fell with carrying towels down a ramp. Yeah.
Aha. So that was a workers' comp.
Yeah.
Well, you still, yeah. Well, that was a definitely, well, it's Claremont. I was going to say that's a smaller race. You finished 76 out of 90, but you're still 17 out of 31 in female. So, I mean, you're still in the front of the pack there. I mean, you're seven cats away from top 10. But what's interesting, though, is then you went from you went from Central Florida Triathlon to Claremont. Then you said, "Ah, that's easy. Let's go to let's. I need some difficulty in hills. Let's go to Tennessee. Let's go run Chattanooga." How was that for you? Because as I said earlier, we take the prize with the exception of maybe people who live in Arizona when it comes to heat training. But there is no, unless you're running over the Skyway Bridge in Tampa. There's very little elevation training. How did you find running in Chattanooga, Tennessee?
Yeah, it was a little challenging. Thankfully, like in Claremont area, we do have some hills, so I was able to prepare for it a little bit. But yeah, Chattanooga was my first 70.3 that I really like. Well, actually, no, it wasn't my first. I did do Florida for my 21st birthday. But that one was a disaster. I didn't even run the run. Like I threw my back out on the bike and I had to walk the whole run. And it was like someone stabbed me in the chest and back the whole time. It hurt really bad. But Chattanooga, I kind of consider that like my first try. And it was challenging. Like I didn't really know how to fuel for that, like nutrition-wise. Yeah, it was a hard race for me.
Well, let's talk transition. And what I mean by that for people who haven't maybe watched an Ironman, and I'm by no means an expert. I watched a few races, actually one of them that you were running in as well. And I noticed that there are appropriately, there's procedures when transitioning from, okay, you just finished your swim. You're heading into wherever your bags are stationed. Some people automatically start peeling stuff off as they're running. Some people wait. I noticed when the bike ride's over, a lot of people actually take their shoes off, leave them in the toe clips, flip the pedals over while still riding, and then pedal barefoot so that when they get closer to their spot, they're already out of their shoes. And I'm sure that's not something you think of right away when you're first starting. You probably pick these things up watching other people do it, or did you find that out early through watching videos on YouTube and talking to people training in real life?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of took me a little while to pick that up. I want to say probably a couple years, just from watching other people and then also my coach, and then doing some research on my own to kind of figure out how to do that. And then I also had to practice a lot on my own, especially with dismounting off the bike, like swinging your leg over while you're still moving and like be able to just kind of run off with the bike. That was kind of a skill that I had to practice a lot.
Well, no, yeah, because I didn't even think about it till just now. I'm just imagining being on a bike, dismounting barefoot. I know some events, they have you dismount over a nice, somewhat padded area with like a running track, but I'm sure some places you're doing it over on blacktop. And so you kind of risk, if you do it wrong, skinning up your feet before you go put socks on and go run a marathon.
Yeah, funny you should say that. I've
not to mention stubbing a toe or breaking a toe and then have to go cram it in your Brooks before you hit the road.
Yeah, it's not a fun feeling. That's why I kind of started, like I would kind of scope out the area first to see where we would dismount and where the transition area is, like if it's in grass or if it's on like blacktop, asphalt, if it's a really hot race, because that makes a difference too. Because if it's cool, like it might not feel that bad, but if it's hot, you're going to feel like you're burning your feet off and blistering up. And so that's what happened. I had a 70.3 and it was so hot, and I went sockless on the bike. So when I came off the bike and, you know, I took my feet off the shoes and I swung my leg over and just kind of went and run with the bike, I burned my feet up and they were blistered and hot and it was awful. And I had to pull out of the run. Like I couldn't even put shoes on. It was bad.
Not all. I mean, that's such a shot to the gut. 'Cause not only do you train all this time, but let's be honest, these races aren't exactly cheap. And so, yeah, you know, the walk away from the time, the amount of energy, some people rent bikes because, you know, maybe they don't have the finances, you know, when they first start, because you're not going down to Walmart and picking up a Schwinn. You're not even going to your local bike shop. These things are custom ordered and, you know, from high-end bike places. And so all the time travel and then something like that take you out. Because, I mean, who thinks about, oh, getting sunburnt feet from stepping on a hot blacktop? Who thinks of that when you're training or preparing for the day? That's just one of those things you have absolutely no control until you do it. And then the next race, I guess my follow-up question is, do you still ride barefoot or do you dismount wearing socks?
Yeah, so I definitely learned from that lesson. So I usually have socks now, like if it's a 70.3 or longer, unless I know if it's going to be a cool race. Like if it's not, the race I did, it happened to be in June and it was really hot. It was a really hot race, but now, for the most part, I go with socks unless I know for sure that I'm going to be okay. Like I know it's something I scope out and think about ahead of time.
So it looks like after Chattanooga, you took it easy. You did a nice little turkey trot for Thanksgiving. Mount Dora. There's a place you didn't give credit for hills. I've done some World War II reenacting in Mount Dora, and it's not exactly flat up there. So you can definitely do some altitude training there. I mean, it's compared to, you know, Sarasota or Tampa area, you know, Mount Dora definitely has some hills.
Yeah, definitely.
And then it looks like, go ahead.
Oh, I was living in DeVaries at the time, so it was right next to Mount Dora.
Did a Miami half marathon. So it looks like it took you from your first triathlon in 2014, unless I'm wrong, or unless Athlinks is wrong, it looks like you did your first Ironman in 2019. The 7.3 World Championship.
Oh, that was a half iron.
Oh, okay. Oh. But that was your first Ironman titled race, according to athletes.
No, I did. I think 2016 Ironman Chattanooga was the.
You're right. I was too focused on Chattanooga. So yes, that was the Ironman Chattanooga event.
Yeah.
And then you did the other races, and then the half world. Now, for the world championship, do you got to participate in qualifying events to get that, or you just sign up and set your record?
No, you have to qualify for those. So you do it at any 70.3, but each 70.3, they give the age group a certain amount of spots to the world championship. So you have to get a spot. So it could be like two spots in your age group, or one spot, or three spots. It depends on how big the age group is. And then if the first couple of people don't take their spot, it can roll down to the next, in the next person.
Sure. The next runner up.
Mm-hmm.
Lakeman, Ironman Championship, St. George.
Oof. That was hard.
Utah. Okay, there we go. So you went from Florida to Tennessee. It's not tall enough. Let's go to Utah. When you do a Western state race like that, do you get there early to acclimate? Does your work allow you to get there early enough to acclimate, or do you just show up a day early and just give it your best?
Yeah, unfortunately, I wish I can show up early to acclimate. But yeah, work doesn't really allow. So I ended up just getting there like the bare minimum of what I need to be able to do the race.
You still overall 463 out of 2,279 for a race. Someone says, oof, I think that's pretty damn good overall finish.
Thanks.
Considering, you know, how many Ironmen you have done previous to this. And you're 61st out of 451 in your age group. I mean, you're in gender. And 10 out of 50 in your division. And that's overall. So it looks like your strongest on that one was your running. Do you find the running's always your strongest?
It seems to be lately. It used to be the bike at one point. At one point, the bike was kind of my strongest. But now lately, it's been the run.
What do you find out of the three disciplines? Which one do you find help when you're training helps overall stamina? Is it the running, the bike riding, or the swimming, because more of your body's engaged in the swim?
That's a good question. I feel like with cycling, you can do more volume on cycling with less risk of injury. And I also find that if you're really fit on the bike, that could also help with your run stamina. Because you can be a really good, really fit runner, but if you're not also fit on the bike, sometimes it doesn't even matter how strong of a runner you are. The bike like can really fatigue you out if you're not super strong on the bike to be able to run.
Well, that makes sense too, because obviously when you're riding a bike, your legs are traveling faster than when you're running, unless you're a Looney Tunes cartoon and you do the cloud thing with the quick moving legs. So that makes sense that your body's physically performing the action in a quicker, longer pace than running, just because, you know, everybody, even if you're the fastest runner in the world, you have a limit on how fast your legs can physically carry your frame. Whereas on a bike, it's a lot different based on whatever gear you're currently having your bike in. So that would make sense that stamina wise, you know, those long distance rides, especially that, you know, the breathing and all that would fall in line more with that. Let me ask you this. I had Jeff Peltier on here, who was he does a lot of long distance running. Fantastic YouTube channel. Does the Namibia, what is it, Namibia 200 or 500? I can't remember. I've watched too many ultra races. And a few other athletes. They also, I find, long distance runners spend some time in the gym so that they can strengthen their core. And obviously, they're not powerlifting and getting huge and bulky, but they are putting some time in at the gym so that they're their body and their bone structure, everything's a little bit stronger. With your super busy schedule, do you put any time in at the gym working on those areas to help your running and your biking and your swimming, or do you just not have time with your busy schedule?
I do. I do try to fit in some strength training. They're just not super long sessions. They might be like 20 minutes, 30 tops. But I do a lot of strength work. I'll try to do it like 3 to 4 times a week, fit it in however I can. A lot of it's at home, though. Sure. Like I'll have my own home dumbbells and TRX bands. And then I also do a lot of core workouts too. So I'll do like a 9 to 10 minute core workout about 4 to 5 days a week. And those are kind of like my breaks too. So like when I take a little short break from work, I'll do my 10 minute little core workout and then get back to work.
As someone who constantly in motion as you are, how do you prevent injury? Now let me give an example. Let's say supposedly you're 45, you've been running for 6 years, you took some time off, you started running again, you got 2 4-mile runs in, plus a bunch of threes, and then you go do an 8-mile run, including 2 miles over a bridge downtown Fort Myers, and about 3.5 miles in it, you feel your knee pop. And you say, well, I told myself I'm going to do this 8 miles. And then you force yourself to do the 8 miles, and for the next week you're limping along. How do you prevent yourself from injuring yourself through pride and the fact that you want to go complete the goal that you set out to go complete before you started that event that day?
Well, actually a somewhat similar situation happened in a recent race. I was doing Ironman Chattanooga 70.3 this May, actually. but it was right after, it was about a month after Ironman Texas. I did Ironman Texas in April. And then a few weeks later, I jumped into Chattanooga just because it was a convenient race for me to do Chattanooga. I could just drive there. And it's fun. I love the town. So I did something dumb the day before the race, and I didn't realize it until after. I ran with 2 different shoes by accident.
Now, hold on a second. We know that you're an early morning runner. Was this a 5 a.m. getting dressed in the dark mistake, or was this I packed the wrong shoes mistake?
This was, I threw the wrong shoes in the car and I was distracted by talking to people in the parking lot mistake.
Now, can we at least say the 2 shoes were the same color at least?
Yeah, like if you saw a picture of me with these shoes, you couldn't tell that they were different shoes. They're like the same exact color. They're the same brand.
Okay,
like
so we're not saying you're wearing one Saucony Cohesion and one Brooks.
No, yeah, no. Like okay. They actually do look very similar. Same exact color. Like when I showed pictures, people pictures of it, because like I had my friend take a picture after, because I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. But they look the same. So,
but how drastically different were they? Did one of them have like a bigger toe box? Did one of them have like a rocker sole so that when you transition forward, your left foot's rocking forward and your right one's not? I mean, what was such a different in technology that it would affect your run that much?
So, are you familiar with the Nike Alphafly?
No.
Okay. So it was an Alphafly and a Vaporfly. And the Alphafly is like this tall. Oh. And then the Vaporfly is like this tall. And I have the short one on my short leg. I have like one leg that's like a little, you know, longer than the other. So I had like the short one on my short leg and then the tall one on my tall leg. So I'm like,
so essentially you ran a marathon as if you were running with 1 foot on the curb of the street and the other foot. Well, it's a little higher than that, but the same principle. It's going to affect your gait. It's going to affect your hip movement. You probably had to get, you know, go to the chiropractor and have your like other leg pulled out to compensate for all the pounding.
Yeah, so I did that. That was the day before the race.
Oh, okay.
Doing, like my warm-up runs and just kind of getting ready. So then when I started the race, everything was all agitated and irritated. And like even on the bike, I felt off. So when I started the run, like the first mile, it kind of started bothering me a little bit. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I can just keep running, run this off, get warmed up. And each mile it started like getting worse and worse and feeling worse. And then my bike, my back just kind of seized up and it was like really hurting. So I made the decision to pull out of the race, because I didn't want it to turn into a bad injury and then keep me from training and getting ready for my next Ironman or my next competition. So I did have to make that decision, but I am glad I did, because if I had kept going, it would have been pretty bad. It could have taken me out for a season. And I immediately went to the chiropractor and he's like, yeah, it's a good thing you stopped when you did. Like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
They had like a medical, one of the massage people help me out.
And ever since then, every time she buys a new pair of shoes, they're a different color.
Yes. I'm not allowed to buy the same color shoes anymore.
It's those little things that people don't think about that can really, really impact you. Yeah, no, my knee is super angry. And I can't even say that I was training, you know, doing a warm-up run for a race. I was just, my goal this year was I want to get a marathon in, which I'm running out of time, but it is Florida, and we don't want to run a marathon in the middle of August. But it's been so long since I've done any real long-distance running. And my only official long-distance race I've ever ran was a half marathon. And interestingly enough, the only reason I ran that is I, as you can see behind me, I got my Savage Race bibs. I ran a handful of 5Ks because I find running 5Ks. And if you're listening to this and you're just now maybe getting in the running or maybe bike riding, I suggest, even if you don't think you're ready for it, sign up for a race somewhere in a distance, the near distance, because then now when you're out running or biking, you're in training. It actually gives you something to motivate yourself for. Well, I got this race coming up that I've already, you know, paid and it's on the calendar. So now you're not exercising, you're training, and it helps you. As I opened the podcast with, a lot of this stuff is mental. It's mental strength and realizing, kind of as I was talking about earlier with military boot camp, is they're training people to realize that your mind is stronger than your body and your body's stronger than you actually think it is. And you can force yourself through your thought process to make your body go further. And so I found it made sense when I was running, because I told Carrie, I was like, I want to do an OCR. She's like, you don't even run, you're going to have a heart attack. I'm like, good point. And so I started running and signed up for 5Ks, did a handful of 5Ks, and did one 10K. And then I did my Savage Race. And first one was fun. And then I said, okay, now my next one, I'm going to do another open, but see if I can get 100% completion. Because if I get 100% completion, then I'll sign up for age group. And so I was really into it. I was training, I was running, I was going to the gym. I'm friends with Moose from American Ninja Warrior, the guy with the moose hat. He has a ninja gym in his backyard he let me train on, so I can kind of get used to grip strength and rigs and all that stuff, monkey bars. And I'm running and I'm running. And this is in 2019. Something happened in 2019 that shut the entire world down. And this is right when it happened. Savage Race came out and said, yeah, so we've been watching the news, and as much as it hurts us because we're going to lose a tremendous amount of money, we're going to have to cancel this race due to COVID. And this was like I said, this was March 2019, so this was all brand new stuff. It hadn't, you know, we're all just finding out about this stuff. And I'm like, well, I've been training. I got to do something. So I started looking around. I found the City of Palms Half Marathon in 5K in Marco Island. Is that what it was? Actually, no, I'm sorry. This was 2020, March 15, 2020. I was looking at the wrong date. The Marco Island Half Marathon in 5K. And I'm going on Facebook. I'm like, hey, everything's getting canceled. Is this event still on? I'm like, yes, it's still on. Turns out it was brought to you by the Physicians Group of Lee County. I'm like, well, if a bunch of doctors say it's cool to run, then we're going to do it. And so I had not been training for a half marathon. At this point, the longest I ever ran is maybe on a few long runs. At the time, I'd ran 10 miles or so. Went out and did it. signed up 4 days before the event, thinking Marco Island, how hilly can it be? Apparently, they must have Indian burial mounds down there or something, because Marco Island's full of hills. Luckily, when I was doing my running in downtown Fort Myers, I run over Edison Bridge. So I had, and they had three bridges down there. So I had a little bit of that in my back pocket. But I actually ran a 940 for someone who didn't train. And, you know, I think at the time I was 42. So ran a 9-minute pace, finished 92 out of 102 people, 59 out of 103 in my gender. And considering I have absolutely no training, I never ran a qualified race that long. I was pretty happy with my run. And so since I got the half marathon in me and I'm getting older and my body's falling apart, I was like, I need to get my marathon under my belt before it gets a little too late. And so that brings me to my next question. You were talking about when you're running, after you ran with your shoe mishap the following day, each mile got worse. And it's usually the other way around. Usually that first mile sucks. And the term people use is the pain cave. And for everybody, it's different. Or not even, pain cave comes later. I guess wear the rust off. And I find for me, usually my first 3 miles are the worst, even when I'm out fun running. But I find once I get to halfway through mile three or maybe halfway through mile two, my body loosens up, my joints loosen up. 4, 5, and 6, I kind of go into that autopilot stage where your body disconnects from your brain and you're just, your body's maintaining that cruise control and your brain's just thinking about 2 million things under the sun. And so for me, once you get past 4 miles, it's, the pain's still there, but I just ignore it. But as you were saying, your each mile got more difficult. For you on a good race, when your training's been on par and everything's going the way you want, I would assume when you're running at your level, you probably run 2 or 3 miles before the race to get past that phase, or no, or do you go in cold?
You know, like for an Ironman,
even a half Ironman, when you go down there, are you like one of those cats who show up like 2 hours early and run 2 miles around the area around the parking lot and stuff to get past that, the first mile pains, or do you pretty much start the race fresh?
For full Ironman and 70.3s, I usually warm up in the water. So I'll swim, do a swim warm up. But for like Olympic distance and sprint triathlons, I do like a running warm up. I'll do 1 to 2 mile run and then do some like plyometrics and then do a swim warm up like right before the start of the race. So it's a pretty long warm up for the shorter distances.
And I know recently you've really upped your game and you're starting to podium. Well, first you're starting to set new personal bests for yourself. And then most recently in a local triathlon event, you won first overall. Is that correct?
At the international distance. Yeah.
How long was the international distance?
That one was a half mile swim, 21 mile bike, and then 10K run. It was really hot. It was like a heat warning day. It was just for fun. I've been kind of really focusing on the Ironman distance this year. So I did Ironman Texas this spring. I got my personal record in the Ironman distance there. And then I did Ironman Lake Placid in July. And now I'm getting ready for Maryland. And then I'm hoping to do Florida.
Now, on the Ironman Texas, the PR, was that on your run or swim or your bike?
Oh, like overall time and the bike. So I did a 9:55 for my overall time, and the bike was a 5:10.
134 out of 1,855 people. That's a damn good finish. I mean,
thanks.
You hear 134, you're like, okay, that's one. No, out of 1,800 people, yeah, that's something to be proud of. And out of women, 27 out of 475. And so, yeah, you're definitely finding your groove. Now, obviously a lot of it comes with experience and doing these races over and over, but have you kind of unlocked something in your training that's allowed you to start breaking PRs and and climbing the rankings there to get closer to that front pack?
Yeah, like I want to say nutrition has played a big role in getting me to that next level, like being able to hydrate better and control my electrolytes, like getting in enough. I've done like some sweat tests to figure out like how much sodium I lose and liquid loss. So I kind of have a little better idea of how much I need each hour. So making sure I'm on top of my calories and nutrition and hydration has been a huge help.
Electrolytes are very important. I think it took me to, I've done 4 Savage races. I think it was right around after my second one, I really started looking at like, why do my calves cramp up and my hands cramp up? It's called lactic acid, stupid. Here's how you avoid it. And so I started reading up. Well, you need to drink gallons and gallons of water and Gatorade before the race. You need to take your gels and nutrition during the race. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Vinny Tortorich. He's a quote unquote one of the first real fitness trainers to the star. He's one helped Margaret Cho lose our weight. He's been working with Howie Mandel for years. And he runs a company called NSNG, No Sugar, No Grains. And he makes this great, it's called Ultra Fat Nut Butter. And it's made for, he does 500 mile bike races and day long, you know, couple day long kayak races. And so during the race, I would take Ultra Fat Nut Butter along with drinking water and all that. And it worked. I was doing these 7 mile runs with these 25 mile obstacle courses, monkey bars, 6 foot walls, all that. And I no longer had the problem with, you know, my first 2 races, I would fling my leg over that wall. And as soon as my calf hip made contact, just instant cramp because I wasn't doing the nutrition. And so once I started studying how to avoid lactic acid buildup, it changed everything for me. Didn't help my grip strength and help me get 100% completion on my obstacles, but I wasn't in so much pain when I was suffering through the rest of the course. And that's just one of those things that I don't think a lot of people, when they first get into these sort of fitness journeys, really put too much stock in. They think everything's okay. It's training, stamina, and speed. Well, that's important, but recovery, nutrition, and, you know, during the race, nutrition as well is huge.
Especially the longer the race it is, the bigger part nutrition plays a role in.
You know, I think it's funny when it comes, you find, especially when it comes to the ultra marathon stuff, that there's a lot more, I don't want to say numerically, but there are definitely a lot more 30, 40, 50 year olds doing ultra running. And I think they realize I'm not going to get any faster the older I get, but my stamina can get better and I can run further, you know. And let's face it, unless you're an elite runner and you're going for those, you know, top finishes, majority of people out there are doing it because they're just trying to beat themselves. They want to set a new personal record. And so as you get older and you realize, okay, my 5K number is going to get slower, my 10K number is going to get slower, my half marathon number, but I can start running further. I can run 50 miles and then 60 miles. And so I think that's one of the nice things about running. Yes, it's bad, it's hard on your body, but let's face it, so is sitting around not doing anything and just eating junk food. That's hard on your body too. So I guess the question is, which one do you want to suffer from the most? But let's talk about nutrition. There seems to be 2 routes when it comes to nutrition for people in fitness. Either you go full vegetarian or vegan, or you go full protein. Which direction did you go with it? What works for your body?
So I have tried both. I was vegetarian for about 7 years. And then I kind of switched the other way. I tried, like a lower carb, higher protein route too. And I kind of, right now I'm somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
So it's kind of like, I do plant-based, I do high protein, I also have carbs, but I try to keep it like complex. My focus is more on real food. So I try to avoid like processed foods and stuff like that. I do a lot of my own cooking.
That's cheaper nowadays anyhow. I mean, let's throw health out the window. Just the cost of everything is so insane. that it's cheaper and healthier just to cook at home.
Yeah, definitely. And I do, even though I do a higher protein like percentage, like I try to get over 100 grams a day, like usually 120 to 150, depending on my training. But it's not all from meat. It's also from, like legumes and Greek yogurt. And I do protein shakes too. And a lot of nuts. Like I do a lot of almond butter, peanut butter, nuts, nut butter. Yeah. I have a lot of that. But yeah, so nothing like super restrictive. Just kind of overall healthy, and I feel like I've responded best to that.
Well, two questions, really. I'll start with the training. When you're training, earbuds or no earbuds?
It depends. Swimming, definitely not.
Clearly.
Biking, not usually. Like, I might have, you know, the open ones that they're not actually in your ear. They're like the conductor ones, so you can still hear.
Okay, like the ones that have the bracket around the back of your earlobe?
Yeah, like the Shox ones, so they're not on your earbud. So if I use anything, it would be that, so I can still hear. But I'll, like, keep it off for half the ride and like just turn it on when I feel like I need a little extra boost. And running, I do usually listen to music when I run, but I do, as it gets closer to the race, purposefully try to get some runs in without music.
And for the audience's sake, that makes perfect sense, because I was just thinking, well, there's no way in hell you can swim, hop on a bike, and then as you're getting dressed, say, well, where's my running belt so I can have my phone so I can listen to music for this full marathon I got to run? So you don't want to, for example, I listen to music when I run, and I find that I run to the tempo of the song which I'm running to. It's going to happen. So if I'm trying to run faster, I'll listen to a more fast tempo music. If I'm trying to maintain a slow, you know, recovery run or exercise run, I'll listen. Might even listen to a podcast where it's no music, but it's something in my ears. And I never gave thought to race day. And I remember when I did my 10K, I think it was the first time I made the transition from wired earbuds to wireless. But I went with a generic wireless, and I got them the day before, so I had no experience with them, and they died like mile two.
Oh, no.
Which, in the big scheme of things, ain't a big deal, except for when every single training run you've ever done, you've trained yourself to run the tempo, and now you're listening to people breathing and feet stomping and background noise. It can definitely slow you down.
Yeah, and in triathlon, you're actually not allowed to listen to music or have MP3 players or anything like that.
For safety, or do they think it's because what I just said, you're kind of artificially amping yourself up through tempo of music?
It could be both. Yeah, it could be a combination of both. So it could be performance, like helps your performance, and safe for safety reasons too.
Sorry, I'm here squeaking. My boss and Terry's down there chewing on her toy between the rain and the dog. So what do you have coming down the pike? What are you training for now?
So I'm getting ready for Ironman Maryland. It's coming up in a few weeks. It's September 16th.
Now, I meant to ask you earlier, when you did Chattanooga, where does the swimming events take place? Is it in a lake? Is it in a river?
For Chattanooga, it was a river swim.
And how is that different than Gulf of Mexico swim down here if you're running on the West Coast, or the Atlantic Ocean when you're running in Miami? How is it different? Do you find that it has a stronger current? Is it just the even better question, transitioning from training and swimming in salt water to going the fresh, do you find that is a difference?
So I don't really have too much experience with ocean swims. Other than swimming on my own, I haven't really raced a lot of triathlons in the ocean. I usually kind of stick to lakes and rivers. Although, I mean, that's going to change this year because I have Florida coming up.
Well, I was gonna say, Florida, you're not swimming in freshwater down here. Too many alligators. I mean, that'll make you swim faster, but I was gonna say, how do you when they do them down here, and they primarily saltwater swims?
It's primarily actually lake.
Really?
There's I've done the lake swims. Ironman Florida is in the Gulf. That one's ocean swim. That one can get really choppy. Like
Yeah.
I find that one kind of a hard swim. Let's see. Lake Placid was a lake swim. That was beautiful lake. St. George was also lake swim. I do like the lake swims.
Sure.
But the river's nice because you have a current, and usually if it's a river swim, you go down the river.
That makes
Like at
sense.
Chattanooga, it's just a downriver swim.
Yeah, as long as you don't do like Ironman Cincinnati where they have you swim in the Ohio River, because that'd just be plain gross. And I can say that because I grew up on the Ohio River.
Oh
But
no.
yeah. So you said Maryland, right?
Yeah, and that swim will be kind of interesting because I've heard that there's quite a bit of a current and you have to swim against the current
Ooh.
and with the current. So it's like a rectangle into and with the current. So that'll be kind of interesting to see how that goes. I hear it's kind of rough, or it can be.
I would assume that Ironman has been around long enough that they got their course markings down to a science. But have you ever been on a course where maybe someone got an accident and hit one of the markers? Or this happens more in ultra marathon. I remember I was watching an ultra marathon over across the pond up in the mountain areas, and some of the locals thought the race was over and they started pulling the markers up. So these cats are out there like going off course. It got to the point where the organizers had to say, okay, we're going to deduct X amount of time because we realized that the course markers were removed. Have you ever found yourself either in a bike ride or maybe even a swim where you're not exactly, do you rely on the people in front of you, or have you been in a position where like, I can't, was that the course marker? Was I supposed to hang a left here? Or do they pretty much have it down to a science?
Actually, there was a swim at Gulf Coast 70.3 in Florida. It was in the Panhandle, and it was a very, very rough swim. The waves were pretty big. I guess there was a storm in Texas, and it kind of stirred everything up. So the waves were so big, I couldn't, like, at some points, I couldn't see where the buoys were. And I didn't know where to go or where to swim, and that was kind of scary. So yeah, I have been there.
So how many Ironmans do you have on the docket for 2023 before the year wraps up? How many are left?
So I have two fulls that I'm planning still ahead left for this year. So hopefully that'll get four in total.
It's a lot of races in what, 8, 9, in 3 months? In 4 months? Gotta get my math together. It's been a long day.
It's so there's like three that are kind of 8 weeks apart, each of them. So like Lake Placid, and then 8 weeks is Maryland, and then 8 weeks is Florida. So it's like a triple.
During your training schedule, do you ever sign up for like just the random 5 or 10K just to kind of give you a training run that's a little extra, a little more exciting just to get the. I've said on this podcast before, if you never ran an organized race, one of the things, the first thing that I noticed when I did my first 5K was the pack mentality came out at me. Meaning that now I'm running with a large group of people, and instinctively you're like, I can run faster than that person. No, I can't run faster than that person. And you kind of find your way in the pack, and then almost like if you're trailing somebody, once your mind gets to that state I talked about earlier where you kind of disconnect from your body, it's almost like being on a roller coaster. Like your body's just instinctively following that line of people in front of you. And I didn't know if maybe I've seen people who, when training for ultra marathons or Ironmans, they'll sign up for the occasional 5 or 10K just to give that day's run a little bit more excitement and just change things up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I actually did that the 4th of July. There was a local 5K right here in Claremont, and I had to do a run workout anyway. So I jumped in, and it was a really good 5K. I ended up doing pretty well. I did like an 18:41, and I won first female, so I was happy about that.
So not only did you get a finisher medal, but you got yourself a nice coffee mug too, huh?
I got a plant. I got a really nice plant.
That's no fair. I've won a beer mug, two beer mugs before. Like the best I've ever done. I've podiumed fifth in two of my 5Ks and in my 10K, I think, in my age group. So I got a couple mugs laying around here. But that's I was thinking about doing that too. Like I want to run a marathon this year, but I'm thinking about. Not right now, it's just too damn hot, but I'm like, elite events always put on runs down here. I just need to go find one of those and run it just to reform a baseline too. Because I haven't ran a official run in probably 2 years. I didn't do any I was going to do set two Savages race last year, but I got injured and so I didn't do it. And that my last race, it's like I'm not getting my completions are actually going the opposite direction. I actually was getting worse from year to year as I got older. It's like, you know, I really want to do this, but I really want to run age group and not open. So I need to work on my training. But then I got injured. So I basically took last year and this year off, to be honest. But I'm thinking about maybe trying to do another Savage or even I need to do a Spartan. I haven't done a full length Spartan. I've done a couple of virtual Spartans, but I need to try a few more of those before I give up the whole OCR stuff. But I'm. My interest is definitely getting more into the ultra stuff. I want to try trail running too, but like around here, it's like I can go down the street and run in the ankle deep sand, but it's not the same as like the dirt trail running you see cats doing. So,
yeah.
but they are starting to get some more ultra marathons down here. I think they have the Forgotten Run, which is in Central Florida. I think it's a 100 miler, but so I'm definitely looking more into that. So you got three, you said three, no, four races left this year?
Two races left, so four total.
Okay. Fantastic. And congratulations on all of your achievements and the fact that you're making your way up to higher up into the pack there and slowly
Thanks.
Chipping away at everybody else running behind you. Is there anything that you would give as far as suggestions or things you've learned to people who maybe are making that transition from maybe bike riding or running or swimming into seriously considering getting into triathlon running, whether it's just a one-time thing to prove to themselves that they can do it, or maybe they want to do it more regularly? Is there a short, not, there aren't any shortcuts, but we're kind of talking earlier about the things that you don't know right away that you have to suffer through and figure out the hard way, like dismounting on hot concrete barefoot. Is there any sort of things that you would suggest to people that to consider when they get into the sport?
Yeah, definitely. I would suggest seek out triathlon clubs. Usually a lot of clubs will have training opportunities. Try to get involved with different groups too. Like if you're new to cycling, maybe try to get with a bike group that's in your area and start riding with them and watching them, observing them, like how they rotate, how they drink out of their bottles, like how they communicate. Just kind of be an observer and learn from them. And then same thing with like swimming. Like I think joining a master swim team was like the biggest help that I was able to get for my swimming. Just kind of being around other swimmers, or people that are just, more experienced in the sport that you're trying to learn, is a huge help.
Earlier, you made reference to a sweat test you had done to kind of see how your body processes and eliminates the things you consume during your race. What other sciences have you utilized to kind of familiarize yourself with your body? I mean, I know there's gut biome tests out there that'll tell you what foods are not good for you personally versus ones that you never considered that ought would be. Are there any other sciences you've used to kind of get to know yourself better to achieve better finishing times with your races?
Actually, lately I've been focusing a bit more on heart rate and cadence on the run. I feel like that's kind of really helped improve my run times in the Ironman distance, especially in the marathon portion coming off the bike. So now, like, instead of trying to just focus on pace, I try to control my heart rate, especially in the first 4 miles or so of the marathon, and keep it low or below a certain cap that I found for myself. So I try to execute it a little bit more controlled, and then I focus on cadence too, because I have short legs. I'm like 5 feet tall, so my cadence is like my ideal cadence is in the 190s. So I shoot for like 190 to 200 as my cadence for the run. So as long as I'm like keeping that cadence and my heart rate is right, my pace ends up being what I want it to be. So I had no idea what my pace was at Ironman Lake Placid, and all I did was go by heart rate and cadence, and I had my best Ironman marathon there. So I did like a 320 at Lake Placid, and it was over 1,000 feet of climbing, and after, biking 100 and something miles and swimming and all the climbing.
Now, do you go with the external heart rate monitor or do you go strictly with the one built in your watch?
So I do have an external heart rate monitor. I use one around my arm. So it's like an armband heart rate monitor.
Let's talk real quick before we wrap this up. Equipment and technology. What watch do you train with and run with?
So right now I actually just got a new Garmin. It's the 965, I want to say, the Garmin Forerunner. So I just got it over the summer from my local running store, Dash Sports, and I love it. It's great. I love all the metrics it tracks.
And they are durable. When I first started running, at the time, Fitbit was, for people who aren't into running and all that, just to, hey, you want to start getting healthier, go Fitbit. And so I got a Fitbit. And when I started running, what I found is, now, granted, they could have changed in the last 5 years because I've been actually wearing my Forerunner 735X for like the last 4 years. The thing's holding up. Battery's not as long as it once was, but it still holds up. But what I found was the Fitbit was very conservative with its numbers. Because what I'd found, at least back then, is steps was a unit of measurement for them, not actual steps. And so at the time, I was driving a lot for my job. And what I discovered is throwing this on the steering wheel, hey, that's a step. Because I'm moving my arm. Or when I swing my arm while in the grocery store, if I swung my arm twice and only stepped once, that was 2 steps. And so I found that I'm getting like 10,000 steps in, quote unquote, at the end of the day. And when I was out running with run groups, their mile finished before mine did. So they would all be rocking the Garmins because Garmin uses real GPS, and they would run their 3 miles and stop. And I'd have to run an extra 40 yards just to hit that same mile marker on my Fitbit. And then Carrie got me my Garmin before my first Savage race because my Fitbit wasn't waterproof. They're water resistant. And I knew at the time, you're crawling through mud, and Savage has still had the year before COVID came out, they were still doing the ice dumpster. So by mile 5, you'd have to go underneath a wall in a wall dumpster full of water and ice. But the following year, when after COVID came out, they kind of got rid of that stuff because you don't want people swimming in communal waters when you got a pandemic out. But that first year, and so, but I've ran 4 Savage races. Fishing, I do a lot of kayak fishing, and like I said, now I have to charge every probably once every 2 or 3 days. But yeah, my Garmin 735 is still, it holds up. They definitely are durable pieces of equipment.
Yeah, definitely. And I like that it tracks the sleep too.
Yep. The only thing that the Connect app didn't have that Fitbit has, but it'll kind of piggyback off of your other apps on your phone, is the one thing I did like is Fitbit had a really intuitive calorie tracking built in. You could scan the SKU codes on your drinks or whatever, and it would already pull up the calorie counts, whereas the Garmin Connect doesn't have, you know, unless you try to download third-party apps, it doesn't really have a good way to track all the calories you take in every day. That's my only real complaint on that.
Yeah, I have it connected with my Fitness Pal.
Yeah.
So that whatever I log in there, it transfers over to the Garmin app.
I've been a Strava guy for years, but they just raised their prices. With the quote unquote discount on my renewal, it's $80 a year now. And I'm thinking, you know, when it was 50, okay, it's a bit of a stretch. But it's like, I'm thinking, for $80, what do I get from my Strava that I can't get for free with my Garmin Connect? So it's like, only thing that sucks now is I can't go back and look at my old pace times. Obviously, it stuff's all on my Garmin, but I focus so much on my Strava, I would actually, my Garmin Connect, I wouldn't edit anything, but I'd go in there and edit the races and how I'm feeling and this and that. But it's like, that's not worth the $80 a year. I think I'm just going to probably, I'll leave it on there because they'll give the basic plan will show you your maps and all that, but they won't let you look at your historical stuff anymore. Now they blur it out kind of like it's a vulgar TV show until you pay that $80. But yeah, I just actually, for those of y'all listening, if you go to failedtofail.com, I just put up an article on the website about has Strava gotten a little too far in their prices. I mean, let's be honest, at $80 a year, you're 30, 40 bucks away from Amazon Prime. And at least with that, I get free videos and shipping on my TV. I mean, I just don't know what they think is worth it for that kind of money a year. And so,
I don't know. I haven't gotten into the whole paying for the Strava premium. I'm still on the free one. Yeah.
Well, I'm back to the free one now because I'm not going to pull that trigger. I think I'm just going to focus more on my Garmin Connect and go that route. Because I did find through Strava the tracking of the equipment was a little easier. How many miles you have on your shoes and setting retirements. Because I'm 6'5". At my prime when I was running a lot, I got down to 207. And I'm heavier than that now, but at my height, my gait, my weight, I find after about 235 miles, I start getting shin splints and ankle pains because at my weight, I start breaking down the soles of my shoes. And that's going to be different for everybody based on your height and your weight. If you're lighter and smaller, you can probably get 300 to 400 miles out of your shoes. But for me, it's about 232. And so I found that was one of the primary things. Once again, you can use Garmin Connect for that too, but I just found it was a little easier through Strava. But yeah, I think I'm going to have to end that relationship with Strava Premium because it just doesn't justify that $80. And that's after the renewal save 10% nonsense. So I can't imagine what the real retail price is. It's like, nah, I'm good. Thanks, Strava.
Yeah.
So Gabby, where can people find you on the internet, your social media links? I know you're on TikTok, you're on Instagram. Where can people find you?
I'm also on Facebook.
And YouTube.
A Facebook page and a website that I need to update because I haven't updated it in a while. But mostly Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook.
And we'll have all those links over at failedtofail.com, so you don't have to try to jot down names and all that while you're driving. Just remember failedtofail.com. You go to the homepage, you'll see Gabby's face, and click on that. We'll have links to not only the download the audio if you don't subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and all those. If you want to download the podcast directly to your device from our website, you can do that. You can also find the YouTube video version of this interview. You can watch it there, and we'll have all the pertinent links. Gabby, thank you so much for your time, and you have anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been great.
Yeah, I saw your TikTok where you were talking about breaking your personal record on your Ironman. And so I was like, you know what? That's perfect for what we do here in Fail to Fail, because kind of how this whole podcast started, because like I said, I have other podcasts, but I find on my general entertainment podcast when I start talking about fitness, people, you know, get distracted because they don't want to hear about that. So I have different podcasts for different hobbies. And the whole title for this podcast, Fail to Fail, and the original, it's kind of weighed from there, but the original theme of it was people who found success in their own terms in areas, whether it's fitness or work or industry, and places that have a hard to achieve success rate. And so when I saw your video about breaking your PR and getting, and knowing damn well that Ironman's not an easy thing, that I thought, well, you're perfect for what we're doing here. So thank you so much for coming on. How do I say your last name without slaughtering it?
Suver.
Suver?
Mm-hmm.
So Gabby Suver, thank you so much. And for everybody who's listening, thank you guys so much for supporting what we do. And if you want to support us more, please head over to failedtofail.com. Click on that Patreon link, like and subscribe. It only costs you $1 a month. And that'll go a long way with supporting what we do. But we get it. We're in a recession. Money's tight. Times are hard. So if you head over to youtube.com, look for Digital 410 Media. Just watch our videos. You don't have to subscribe. It didn't cost you a dime. And we have everything from the Fail to Fail podcast, the What's in Your Head podcast, the What's a Scuttlebutt podcast, videos on fishing, videos on all my savage races, and much, much more. So you can head over to YouTube and support us that way. For Gabby and myself, my name is Don, and we will talk to you all next time around. Thank you so much, and here we go.
This has been a Digital 410 production.